Good morning. Welcome to the First Universalist Unitarian Church. My name is Cheryl Hemp, and I am a member of this congregation, and I want to extend a special spring welcome to any visitors joining us this morning. Since 1858, UUWASA has served as a vital voice for liberal religion in central Wisconsin. We are an intentionally free society that welcomes all people just as you are, regardless of age, sexual orientation, ethnicity, or economic situation. Wherever you are on life's journey, you are welcome here. And between Sundays, we'd love to have you at one of our classes or events, so be sure to subscribe to the church's newsletter and follow us on Facebook or Instagram for updates. And I would like to highlight a couple of announcements at this time. First and foremost, today after church, we have our first of the month potluck, which is held upstairs in the dining hall. Everyone is welcome. If you didn't bring a dish to pass, there is always plenty of food, so please go up the stairs or the elevator to the top of the building and right after church and meet there for fellowship and really always excellent food. So hope to see you there. And as a reminder, there will be an American Red Cross blood drive here on Tuesday, April 9th, coming up. So if you'd like to give blood, please contact the church office. And I wanted to especially highlight today that the goods and services auction is coming up. It is about a month away now, so it's coming quickly. So I'm really asking people to do a couple of things. One is there's a couple of sites where you can pick up these donation forms right on the counter as you come into the church. And then right around the corner, there's a little table, an auction table. And you can also go online and download one of these forms. We need your donations. There's suggestions in the information at all of these sites as to what you can donate. And if you write up a little blurb and send that in, we will be putting together a catalog by the 19th, so it's a couple weeks you have to get your donations in to be included in the catalog. And then the other super important part is we need people to buy tickets to the event. We have, as I said, a month, but we also need to give a final count to the caterer a week before. So let's try to move out of our usual UU way of doing things and actually buy a ticket today. because it'll really help with our planning for the event. And Mike is going to be right around the corner at the table selling those tickets today. You can also buy those online if you go onto our website. So there's a couple different ways to do this. Thank you for your time on this, and I hope to have everyone there. It's a super fun event. And then a last announcement today is to honor Earth Day, which is coming up on Sunday, April 21st. So we will be having the official Earth Day theme this year is Planet versus Plastics. The 2023-24 scroll for Project Sea Change will be on the display, and the 2024-25 scroll, they're on the table in the atrium, will be ready for you to record your weekly good deeds for the planet, such as recycling approved plastics. We ask that you, on Earth Day Sunday, contribute one cup of a raw fruit or vegetable washed and cut into bite-sized pieces. And as we did last year, we'll combine all of this together into a big, colorful, communal concoction salad of truly tasty delight. So that will be our UUWASA Earth Day Super Salad, and that's a few weeks away as well. Lots of announcements today, but lots of good things happening here. So, as we begin our worship together, let us take a moment to extend peace and blessing to one another. Please rise and greet your neighbors as you are able. Yeah. Dear friends, let us gather our hearts and minds for worship. Please join me in reciting the chalice lighting, which is printed in your order of service. We light this chalice for the light of truth, the warmth of love, and the fire of commitment. We light this as a symbol of our gathered community and the divine spark in each of us. And now, if we could rise again as you are able to sing our opening hymn, number 361, Enter, Rejoice, and Come In, number 361.
If you have ever known something and known it really, really well, so well that you have been certain that you were absolutely right. Well, for those willing to admit it, you are not the first. There once were four princes, brothers, who all their lives had heard stories from their dad, the king, about a magnificent redbud tree, a tree more marvelous than any other. They all wanted to see the special tree, and they all wanted to be the first. Late one winter, the eldest prince found an opportunity. He was alone in the chariot and asked the driver to please take him to see this magnificent redbud tree. It was a long and dangerous journey, but the driver understood the prince's desire, and, well, he was the prince. He kind of did what he said. So the driver reluctantly agreed to take him there. Soon they were winding their way along the narrow winding track, deeper and deeper into the forest. The chariot stopped, the prince got out, and noticed one tree that was different from all the others. And this is where your DRE remembers she left her clicker back there. So one second. The prince was so stunned and disappointed that he didn't say a word. He returned home feeling sad and said nothing to his brothers about his journey. A few months later, the second prince had the same opportunity. He was alone in the chariot and asked the driver to take him to see the magnificent redbud tree. It was still a long and dangerous journey, but the driver had taken the eldest prince already, so he reluctantly agreed to take the second prince to the tree. Soon they were winding their way along the narrow winding track deeper and deeper into the forest. The chariot stopped, the prince got out, and noticed one tree that was different from all the others. The second prince was so awed by what he saw, he was speechless. The prince returned home full of joy, but said nothing to his brothers about his journey. Another few months later went by, and the third prince had his chance. I'm sure you can guess what happened. He was alone in the chariot and asked the driver to please take him to see the magnificent redbud tree. It was a long and dangerous journey, but it couldn't be fair to not take this prince when he had taken the others, so the driver reluctantly agreed to take him to the tree. Soon they were winding their way along the narrow, winding track, deeper and deeper into the forest. The chariot stopped, the prince got out, and noticed one tree that looked like none of the others. The third prince was so unpleasantly surprised by what he saw, he could not speak. He returned home feeling bitter and said nothing to his brothers about his journey. A few more months passed, and the youngest prince got his chance, and you all know what happened by now. He was alone in the chariot and asked the driver to please take him to see the magnificent redbud tree. It was a long and dangerous journey, but the driver had taken all three before, so the driver reluctantly agreed to take the fourth prince to the tree. Soon they were winding their way along the narrow, winding track, deeper and deeper into the forest. The chariot stopped, the prince got out, and noticed one tree that was different from the others. The prince was so startled by what he saw that he couldn't stop laughing. He laughed and laughed all the way home. And of course, the other princes wanted to know why the youngest prince was laughing, and he told them, "The redbud tree is the most ridiculous name. There are no red buds, just black beans hanging down from the branches. It should be called the bean tree." "No, no, you're wrong," the oldest brother said. "It was so desolate, just bare branches. It should be called the dead tree." "Wait a minute," said the third brother. "It had leaves. They just looked like spinach. Look. And it should be called the dread tree." "What are you talking about?" said the second brother. "How could you have missed the beautiful tree? The magenta blooms like are like sunrise. It was truly a magnificent redbud tree." The princes continued arguing, adamant as all the others, that he and only he knew the truth. And the king and driver listened with a smile because they knew, as you do now, it was the same tree, just in a different season. Now, if only the princes would listen, if only they would welcome a little doubt and hear their brothers' experiences, then they would know too. And maybe they would even agree that the magnificent redbud tree was beautiful in all seasons. And that is our story for today. Our preschoolers through sixth graders are invited to join us downstairs for children's chapel, and the seventh through 12th graders are invited upstairs to Walker Hall for their Connections Cafe. And whether you're heading off to RE or remaining in the sanctuary, I invite everyone to join in singing our children's song. The words are printed in your order of worship.
I'd like to invite everyone to join me in a spirit of prayer and meditation. Start by uncrossing your feet if your feet are crossed and place them flat on the ground. Get yourself into a comfortable position, and if you're comfortable closing your eyes, please close them. Take a moment and grow your awareness of your body, the joys and sorrows that you've been carrying this week, a nagging ache somewhere. And join me in taking two deep cleansing breaths. The first one deep and full into the stomach. And slow out. Another one deep and full into the stomach. And out. Let us pray. Infinite spirit of life, seen in the beauty of the holy aspirations of our souls, make us to feel the thrill of life that comes to all Earth's creatures each spring. Let the sun melt the frost of indifference in our hearts, strengthen and revive the barren branches of our lives. Cause us to bloom in confidence and cheer. Give us to bear the benefit of service and the yield of kind deeds. And in your own good time, ripen the harvest for the blessing of all of us. And when the chill storms come as they do, strengthen us in the assurance that beyond the longing of doubt, there awaits other seasons of blossom and benefit, other paths and gardens still unknown, but certain as the spring tide in our souls. Now let us call to mind all the joys and sorrows in our lives, and let us meditate on them in silence together now. Amen. Please stay seated and open your gray hymn books to 352, Find a Stillness.
Let there be an offering to sustain and strengthen this place. which is sacred to so many of us, a community of memory and of hope, for we are now the keepers of the dream. The mission and ministry of UU Wausau is made possible by the generous support of its friends and members. You can place a gift in the plate as it passes by. You can also visit our website, uuwausau.org, to make a one-time or recurring gift with your credit or debit card. And another way to support our church is to buy auction tickets. Thank you for your support.
For this sermon this morning, I chose a poem entitled Passengers by Billy Collins. The poet writes, "At the gate I sit in a row of blue seats with the possible company of my death. This sprawling miscellany of people, carry-on bags and paperbacks that could be gathered in a flash into a band of pilgrims on the last open road. Not that I think if our plane crumpled into a mountain, we would all ascend together, holding hands like a ring of skydivers into a sudden gasp of brightness, or that there would be some common spot for us to reunite, to jubilize the moment, some spaceless, pillarless Greece where we could, at the count of three, toss our ashes into the sunny air. It's just that the way the man has his briefcase so carefully arranged, the way that girl is cooling her tea, and the flow of the comb that woman passes through her daughter's hair. And when you consider the altitude, all those secret parts of the engine and all the hard water and the deep canyons below, well, I just think it would be good if one of us maybe stood up and said a few words, or so as to not involve the police, at least quietly wrote something down." There it ends our reading.
Hey.
Well, good morning. It's nice to see you all. I'm going to do something I don't usually do. I'm going to start with a quote in this sermon. It's by the late E.O. Wilson. He was an evolutionary biologist. He wrote several popular and award-winning books. He had this great book, An Imagined Conversation Between a Pastor and a Scientist, that I go back to. Anyways, the quote goes like this. The real problem of humanity is the following. We have Paleolithic emotions, medieval institutions, and godlike technology. And it is terrifically dangerous, and it is now approaching a point of crisis overall, end quote. Doesn't that just warm your heart on this wonderful Sunday spring morning in north central Wisconsin? I don't know about you, I know about some of you actually, but I was raised by parents who talked about the end of life as we know it all the time. My mom and stepdad, along with my grandma, they raised me in a Christian environment that understood Jesus's return to be imminent. That's a fancy word for could happen at any moment. Meaning that the sky could split in two and Jesus would ride down from heaven in a Dodge Ram pickup truck and he would be followed by an angry band of angels who would lay waste to all sinners, both living and dead. Doesn't that warm your heart also on this Sunday morning? Now, my dad had a similarly frightening eschatology, which is a stained glass word, which we in the church world define as being preoccupied with the final destiny of humanity, eschatology. So my dad, he's been talking about climate change and human-caused environmental disaster since way, way before Al Gore invented the internet and way before Al Gore made that documentary. So, with parents like this, grandparents like this, I spent a lot of car rides riding in the back seat of my parents' minivan, looking up at the sky, afraid that Jesus would return at any moment. Or if I was riding around in the back of my dad's car, I was afraid that the ice caps would suddenly melt in an instant and the oceans would rise and they would drown my poor dear grandparents in Florida. And I worried that all of this would happen before I got a girlfriend or I learned how to drive, which is really what I cared about. And so what Wilson's and my parents' and my childhood fears contain is an understanding that human beings aren't fully in control of our destiny, except to the extent that we are. And in that case, we are pretty much ruining everything. Now, if you sort of squint, or if I take my glasses off and I stop seeing 2020, it seems to me that some scientists don't look all that much different from some Christians when it comes to having a rather pessimistic eschatology. And lots of people have this sort of existential dread when it comes to humankind's future, and maybe you're one of those people. So, there's this section in the Gospel of Mark that I heard growing up quite often, and it goes like this. As he came out of the temple, one of his disciples said to him, "Look, teacher, look at all those large stones and look at that large building." And then Jesus asked him, "Do you see these great buildings? Not one will be left here upon another. All will be thrown down." If I were to summarize this passage, this is how I'd summarize it. It is a giant buzzkill. It bums me out whenever I read it. Much like pretty much every edition that I buy of the New York Times. It also bums me out to read the news. The short version of Mark's 13th chapter and today's front page is, nothing is going to last. Now, this faith I serve, Unitarian Universalism, rest easy, it is a hopeful faith. Or at least it claims to be on paper. It puts a lot of stock in humankind's ability to heal its ills. The famous 18th century sermon that made Unitarianism take off like a rocket ship basically said that we are the captains of our own destiny. How many of you think that's accurate? No one raised their hand. Okay. So in it, William Ellery Channing, he emphasized a lot of things. It's like a 6,000-word sermon. This one's only like 1,800 words, so you're welcome. But in that sermon, Channing emphasized reason, moral autonomy, and the pursuit of social reform as being central to our faith. Now, since he preached that sermon, 205 years worth of blood and water has flowed under the bridge. A lot of history has been added to the books. The world has changed. Religion has changed. Technology has changed, society has changed. And much of what Channing looked forward to in that sermon, it hasn't come true, at least not fully. World peace, nope. Scientific solutions for every ill, nope. Equality for everyone, nope. To use a modern phrase, our bubble has been popped. Speaking of having your bubble popped, religion is one of today's bubbles that experts really enjoy popping. And so in last week's Atlantic, there's this really popular piece by Derek Thompson, who's a great writer. You should read it. It's short. It's called The True Cost of the Church Going Bust. And so Thompson was raised as a Jew, but a mostly secular Jew, and today he describes himself, even in this article, as an agnostic. But this agnostic, this guy who more or less has never gone to church or synagogue or anything like it, he laments, he sort of goes on in a sad tone about the decline of religion for these reasons. Because religion has proven to have the power to bring people together. It's proven to have the power to unify us, especially around common causes, like, as the history books show, the abolition of slavery, women's rights, ending apartheid. I could go on and on and on. And so the decline of religion, in Thompson's estimation, doesn't just put society at risk, though it does. It puts our hearts and our souls at risk as well. For starters, now this is me, this isn't Thompson, religion is about bodies. In order to practice religion, you have to use these aging and hurting and delicate and amazing bodies to be religious. In order to be religious, you have to hold hands with people, you have to reach out to other people, you have to bow your heads, and you have to kneel, and you have to lie prostrate. And it also, what religion does, is it pulls us out of the daily habits we seldom question, which for most of us, if we're being honest, it means that we take a brief but definite break from our digital enslavers. And perhaps most of all, being religious means that we seek the holy, we seek that which is greater than us in the presence of others in a church like this, or in mosques, or synagogues, or dinner tables. And church is also about making friends. One of the wonderful things about an old church like this is you meet people who have their core group of friendships right here in this church. It's about a weekly reunion of congregants who say yes to each other. It's about finding meaning in the world, which it's kind of hard to do, to find meaning in the world. At least that's what Bono from U2 said. He sings this wonderful song. It's sort of the band's anthem. It goes like this. I have run, I have crawled, I have scaled these city walls. I have kissed honey lips, felt the healing in her fingertips. But I still haven't found what I'm looking for. And so what Thompson and Bono share is a respect for religion's commitment to two of humankind's biggest hangups. These are what I think are two of our biggest hangups: doubt and faith. What these Two experts understand is that many of us walk a knife's edge seeking meaning and purpose in our lives. And so traveling this path, it often starts when we're young. Raise your hand if you started questioning the faith around, you know, middle school. How many of you questioned your faith around middle school? Everybody answers yes to this. So traveling this path, it often starts when we're young. I hardly know anyone who has avoided questioning the faith or the worldview that they inherited. So as a kid, the pastor at my church, he frequently told us this. He said, if you have the faith of a mustard seed, you can move mountains. That's in the Bible. That's what he told us. The faith of the mustard seed, Brian, you can move mountains. Now, mostly what I tried to do is I tried to use this faith to get girlfriends. That's what I used it for. In all seriousness, though, the faith I was taught as a kid was a little bit too static. It was a little bit too fixed. It assumed faith was somewhere you arrive at rather than a territory you never stop exploring. And this is actually what I think Mark's gospel is really getting at. Here's what I mean. I was undersold as a kid the pilgrim character of what it means to be a person of faith. And so way back in the 4th century, the African theologian Augustine of Hippo, he got at this when he said that all of us are peregrini, which often translates to this word, exile. But there's another way to translate that word, which is closer to what Augustine really meant. We find its true meaning because you can track the word pellegrini in the Latin, and it became what? Peregrino or peregrina in Spanish, or pellerine or pellerin in French. And the best way to translate peregrini is pilgrim. And so what Augustine observed in people at church when he went to church, at school when he taught, in the marketplace and in the hospital, is that all of us are on a journey home. But that journey home winds through a world that is out of joint, as Wilson tells us. As Wilson tells us, it's out of joint individually, communally, ecologically, violently, despairingly, and fearfully. As religious and science-minded people like to say, for various, though not always different reasons, the earth groans. In other words, we're pilgrims in a groaning world. And yet it's in this groaning world that we find home. And so what Augustine believed is that none of us are on a pilgrimage from here to there. A true pilgrim's journey is from here to here. The greatest pilgrimage we're called to isn't to holy sites like Vatican or the Camino or to Lambeau Field. The greatest pilgrimage we're called to is deeper into things, deeper into the reality of ourselves, of our neighbors, of our other than human fellows. And it's within this pilgrimage, Augustine said, that what we find are moments of deep doubting and moments of great faith. But here's where I want to push back Augustine for just a bit. And here's what I quickly want to say. My advice is to never give too much credit to those times when you are deep in doubt or high atop mountains of confidence. I'm not saying that these moments are unimportant. It's just that in my experience and my observations, those highest highs and those lowest lows are never as powerful as we think, and they never last forever. What I hope you're willing to consider is that in those moments when you feel like you've lost faith in yourself or your church or your ability to move mountains, you probably have a lot more faith in those moments than you realize. Just think about this in terms of professional achievement. I mean, really, think about how much emphasis we put and how much we define ourselves by the work we do. I can speak from experience here. For much of my career in the pursuit of becoming a professional ministry, I pushed myself from day one to get the very best grades, to get the very best marks from headquarters in Boston and the very best comments in every single one of my interviews. And I got pretty much everything I wanted. But now that I've been in ministry for more than a decade, the moments I cherish are never the milestones. Every single one of the moments I cherish are everyday interactions. Or think about exercise. We fetishize working out. People love to talk about working out. My wife tells me all the time, she says, oh, I wish I had more time to exercise. But of course, it's hard to do. If you know my wife, she'd have to fit in exercising between all of her many responsibilities. She's a teacher. She's a homemaker. She's a parent. She's a friend. She's an artist. But I tell you what, there's seldom a day that she doesn't come home from school or shopping or whatever, and she looks down at her Apple Watch, and she sees that it's recorded what? Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of steps tending to her life, tending to her family, and the needs of her students. Just going about her day doing things like talking and praying and walking from classroom to classroom, grocery shopping, and trying to figure out where you parked whenever you walk out of the grocery store. All of this is part of the pilgrimage. So much of our imagination in the United States context is formed by a call to leave home and journey towards the new distant shores. And some of us do indeed need to leave home, and some of us would be wise to not look back. But some of us, and maybe even most of us, will be called to take a pilgrimage that winds through faith and doubt right back to the home we already have. To recognize that we're often transformed by care, by being fallibly faithful to a place, to a people, to a faith, to a calling to be homemakers in a world with far too much loneliness and far too much homelessness. This doesn't mean that there won't be seasons when we just can't, when the best we can do is just make it through a day, one at a time. But being a pilgrim of doubt and faith asks us to trust that there are countless unassuming parts of our spiritual lives that have an element of faith to them, and that those parts really do add up. Sometimes it's hard to read the signs and hear the messages. And maybe today is one of those days. But as Augustine said, faith is a journey from here to here. Like when you dream of a good future for your children, or when you're moved by an ancestor of faith, or when you have more doubts than faith, because at least what that means is you're still asking questions. Or whenever you hold someone you love in your heart, or whenever you make the most of someone's memory by letting them live on in your living, or when you notice how beautiful spring can be up here on the Northwoods, or whenever you're able to see the inherent worth and dignity of other human beings, or whenever you remember to pray for someone, or whenever you have the courage to ask someone to pray for you. The faith that you need is already in you. Because it's not always the journey you had planned that ends up meaning so much. It's not always the mountaintops that matter in the end. Because sometimes it's the life you didn't choose that blesses you in the end. Amen. Let us now rise in spirit or body and sing our closing hymn in the gray book, number 6, Just As Long As I Have Breath.
Thank you.
I invite you to reach out, take the hand of someone nearby, or if you're here alone, you can reach out with your heart. May the truth that sets us free, and the hope that never dies, and the love that casts out fear lead us forward together until the day spring breaks and all shadows flee away. Have a seat, relax, and enjoy the postlude.